Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey everyone, Josh Norris here with another episode of the Roto-World Football Podcast, preseason week 3 edition. Hopefully you've enjoyed our last 2 weeks with Evan Silva. He's back again today. But a few housekeeping notes. First, this is just a two-parter podcast. The first one, this one, is Thursday and Friday games. Second one is all the Saturday games. Second, thank you so much for subscribing and rating and reviewing the podcast wherever you want to. Stitcher, iTunes, Audio Boom, all of the good places, all of them. We're hoping to bring you good content right now, but even more so once the regular season rolls around, 3 podcasts a week featuring all the great Roto-World content, Raymond Summerlin, Evan Silva, Roto Pat, Rich Rebar, Nick Minzio, all the guys, including myself. And third, there's another great podcast out there that you should listen to, especially if you're into NASCAR, the NASCAR on NBC podcast. Some pretty good guests as of late. Tony Stewart, Jimmy Johnson spoke with Nate Ryan. So check it out. It's featured right now on iTunes. You can go click on it there or just search for it. NASCAR on NBC podcast. Once again, week 3, Thursday, Friday slate on this episode. And right now, here is Evan Silva. So Evan, the company line for the third preseason game, is it the dress rehearsal, the starters play until the third quarter or into the third quarter, I should say. And only 2 Thursday games this week. Let's start with the first one. Falcons, Dolphins. Your boy, Mohamed Sanu, Evan, does not look terrible, at least in the preseason. Which, I mean, not a surprise, but he is going to have opportunity here. Is this someone that – is he on your do-not-draft list headed into redraft leagues, redraft drafts? Or is he someone you might consider at some price point?
No, I definitely consider him at price points. He's a double-digit round pick. He is not a big upside guy as long as Julio is healthy, but his upside could come into play if Julio got hurt. Yeah. He's like a wide receiver 5 pick. I like him as an NFL 10 pick. I think he's worth owning in all dynasty leagues. But I mean, I don't, you know, you're not drafting him to be a starter early right in the season. You're not viewing him as that. He's bench depth.
And really, we didn't say he was a bad player. It's just the money that they gave him was kind of the eye-popping part of the whole thing. Brandon Wilds, it seems, we talked about him last week, seemed to lock up that third running back job so far. I do want to talk about Devontae Freeman, though, because he had another receiving touchdown, I believe, in this game. Or no, it wasn't receiving. It was a rushing touchdown outside the 20. But he looks good still, man. Like he made bust first round pick Justin Gilbert miss at the line of scrimmage and then took it in. I'm still on the Devontae train here. Absolutely headed in mid to late second round. He's always available and I'm always snatching him up.
Yeah. And they are trying to work in Tevin. I mean, it's about an even split with the ones so far. And I think that we can kind of expect that, but, maybe, you know, they want to do that. They want to do that. It's just, will they be able to do that because they have a bad defense,
right?
And they're going to be playing from behind a lot. And Devonta Freeman has a huge edge as a passing game player. And we know that he's better I mean, he's built better, and the way that he runs, I think, is better down near the goal line. So he's going to get the money touches. You know, he's going to be catching passes. He's going to be scoring touchdowns. And Tevin Coleman is going to be, I think, ultimately a change of pace back who, in an ideal world, they can get him 8 to 12 carries a game. But, you know, games don't always work out the way that teams want them to go.
There's a lot to talk about with the Dolphins. I believe Arian Foster will make his debut in this game. Is that correct?
Yeah. He did play a little bit in the last game.
Okay.
He just got buried behind the line of scrimmage. I think he had like -5 rushing yards, but you know, don't really have any takeaways
right.
from that. But yeah, I want to get a longer look at him. I mean, I like to look at the young players in preseason, and I like to look at players coming off of injury, and we should get an extended look here at Arian Foster.
Have you enjoyed your long look at Isaiah Pede this preseason?
I haven't even seen him, honestly.
he's actually done some things this preseason, Evan. He has with the Dolphins. And maybe this is a pointless question, but it seems like he's going to be maybe even the third or fourth running back when this season starts, because there was even a report earlier today that Kenyon Drake might start the season on injured reserve. And then they have Damian Williams as well. But I'm not saying you roster Isaiah Pede here, but he's certainly been – in some ways, a solid play in preseason.
Well, he's locked onto the 53 because he plays special teams.
Okay.
So, you know, how many RBs are they going to keep? Will they keep 3 and then IR Kenyon Drake? Will they keep 4, including Damian Williams and IR Kenyon Drake? I mean, he's on the team, and he's someone to keep in the back of our mind. I mean, for as big of a disappointment as he was in St. Louis, he was a second round pick in the NFL.
Yeah.
You know, like you mentioned, he's been productive in the preseason, and he's behind Jay Ajayi, who has, you know, some injury concerns, and Arian Foster, who probably it's inevitable that he will miss some time. So Isaiah Pede is a guy to keep in mind.
Kenny Stills is another guy who went off last week in the preseason game. Had some red zone targets. That doesn't necessarily seem to be his game once the season, you know, starts. But at best, what? He's the third mouth to feed in this passing game. So while he has looked impressive this preseason, that's not necessarily something we can carry over into, hey, he's definitely going to get opportunities in the regular season.
Right. Just the story is that he's clearly ahead of Leonte Carew right now.
Which is noteworthy,
yeah.
Because the team really targeted Carew in the draft as someone that they definitely wanted to get.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, he's Leonte Carew. I think we all like him, you know, maybe to varying degrees. But he's a rookie, and that'll happen for a rookie. But I mean, he could become a factor at some point. He's just not right now.
Cowboys and Seahawks is the only other Thursday game. This is the debut of Ezekiel Elliott. I just got him at 109 in one draft. I felt really good about that. I mean, I know that you have mentioned that he might be ranked, if he was healthy heading into the season, as your running back one. Should we withhold? I mean, you can't withhold optimism here, because if you want him in your draft, you're going to have to take him really without maybe seeing him other than this preseason game, because this might be the only time we will see him before the season starts.
Yeah, and again, he's a rookie. So he, you know, it stinks that he missed so much time. I mean, he missed like 3 weeks of camp.
Right.
And Alfred Morris has been great. And the defense is a huge concern for game script. And he just hasn't gotten a lot of reps with Tony Romo. But he will get that this week. I think it's a big week for Ezekiel Elliott. I want to see him play well. They're facing Seattle. He's expected to get 8 to 12 touches, which is a pretty good workload for a preseason game. And, you know, don't want to see him out there missing blitzes, you know.
Want to see him
making the most of his carries.
He starred at Ohio State. Like, he might be the best blocking ball carrier we've seen in the past few years. Not only as like a pass protector, but also as like a lead blocker in some scenarios. So I'm right there with you. I was going to say the same thing. His passing down ability is something that hopefully stands out in this game. And
keep in mind that doesn't always necessarily immediately translate. You remember we loved Devonta Freeman him as a pass protection guy coming out of Florida State.
Right.
But he actually struggled in pass pro as an NFL rookie.
Right.
So it doesn't always necessarily translate super seamlessly. But I think that was definitely a strength on Ezekiel Elliott's scouting report. And I don't want to see him give up any sacks and blitz protection of Tony Romo, because that would be a huge concern if that happened.
By the way, Josh,
Brian Brodus of Cowboys.com thinks that Darren McFadden is going to open the season on the NFI list, which is the equivalent to the PUP list and would cost him the first six games. Just something to file away.
Definitely. And that means that probably Darius Jackson is the third running back, who has looked athletic, obviously, during the preseason. Seattle, CJ Procise, I believe, is back at practice. I think Alex Collins has looked slow and not very good during his time this preseason. Obviously, you can't extrapolate too much off of that because it's just a handful of carries. But
Hashtag as expected.
It is. But, I mean, there was positive buzz throughout the preseason, throughout the offseason about Alex Collins, because he was the only healthy one other than Christian Michael. Just to me, he just looks like a guy, Evan. And if Procise comes in there, and there'll be different types of ball carriers, but if Procise looks good and there's Thomas Rawls already likely coming back for week one, I think there was a report that he's going to be ready for week one. I mean, there's nothing there for Alex Collins at all.
Yeah, so you got Rawls and C. Mike locked into roster spots. Right. CJ Procise, I mean, he's locked into a roster spot. He was a third round pick, and he's healthy now. And then this kid, Troy Maine Pope, the UDFA, who I had never even heard of.
I have not heard of him before.
Before this, he's been ripping it up in the preseason. Hmm. And the Seahawks are a team that is, you know, philosophically bound to, hey, you know, if you win a competition, like we're not going to keep. So I'll be interested to see if they end up keeping Troy Maine Pope and maybe try to get Alex Collins onto the practice squad or, you know, cut him. I mean, we'll see. But I think it's an interesting competition that, you know, no one's really talking about right now.
A big storyline has been Tyler Lockett playing fewer snaps than Jermaine Kearse with the quote first team offense. Adam Levitan has done some great work on tracking and charting first team preseason reps. So go check out that. But Tyler Lockett, I believe, has played 17 of 30, while Jermaine Kearse has played 25 of 30. I think we can all agree that Tyler Lockett is the superior talent, but we always talk about opportunity. So for his ADP, and I keep drafting Tyler Lockett because I like his upside and I like his talent, but the opportunity just might not be there to really warrant where he's going in drafts right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can envision a scenario where the season starts, we're like three or four games into the season, and Tyler Lockett has like target totals of, you know, 4, 5, 6, and 4 or something like that. And, you know, it would be like at that point, it would become time to be like, you know, what's going to be the deal with this guy? I mean, I think ultimately this is going to be a three receiver offense. But the Seahawks did give Doug Baldwin and Jermaine Kearse money this offseason, and Tyler Lockett has not been promoted over Jermaine Kearse, who I think that they still see as their best blocking receiver. So that would lock Kearse into the two receiver sets, and maybe he would play in the one receiver formations as well. Yeah, Tyler Lockett is a tricky one because we know that he has the talent. It's just how many targets is he going to get? You know, is he going to miss big chunks of snaps? And he's sort of a boom or bust guy right now, I think.
First game on Friday is Patriots and Panthers. With this Deion Lewis news, Evan, how much does that help James White in, one, finding an opportunity once the regular season rolls around and really pushing him towards maybe even being a – out-of-the-box DFS play week one, because he has a firm role in this offense as the pass-catching running back?
He does. He does. We think. I mean,
we do think. We never know.
Right. Assuming that, you know, Tyler Gaffney doesn't cut into that role. Assuming that DJ Foster doesn't cut into that role. I mean, I don't think that DJ Foster will, but, you know, people, it was like James White hype week last week, and I you know, you can go back and look at the stats that James White put up in the second half of last year. I mean, he scored some touchdowns. He had some big receiving weeks. But that was with LeGarrette Blount out for the year, and the Patriots were rendered a one-dimensional offense. Right. They didn't have Julian Edelman. They didn't have LeGarrette Blount. Gronkowski missed some time during that stretch. Amendola missed some time. So I don't know if that, you know, that little sample size is predictive for how things are going to be. Tom Brady, of course, was playing, and now we have Jimmy Garoppolo for the first four games. So James White is not someone that I'm aggressively trying to get in fantasy, and I've started to see him go pretty high, like in the single-digit rounds. And
yeah, I did too.
Yeah, so you know, I'm probably gonna just let other people draft him, and I want LeGarrette Blount on my fantasy team this year. He has 23 touchdowns and 30 career games as a Patriot, and you know, if this offense, I mean, there is a conceivable scenario wherein the Patriots, instead of, you know, playing like one-dimensional pass-first offense, they try to pound the ball with LeGarrette Blount to hide their quarterback in the first month of the season,
right.
Especially that week two game against Miami where the Patriots will be back at home. I think that will be for them to fire up LeGarrette Blount.
Moving on to the Panthers, we talked at length last week about Devin Funchess versus Ted Ginn versus Kelvin Benjamin. Mm-hmm. If you go back and read an interview with the offensive coordinator, he talked about they want Kelvin Benjamin to play 30 snaps in this game, and then they'll see from after that. Look, I understand, and we don't have to rehash this completely, that Devin Funchess has looked great this preseason. Ted Ginn looked great last week on that one pass that he took 61 yards, and they kind of benched him the rest of the time because they didn't need to see anything else. I still think, unless something drastically changes, unless they want to send some message to Kelvin, which I don't think they want to do, it's going to be Kelvin and Ted Ginn opening in two wide receiver sets when the season rolls around and slipping Funchess in there. But I did like your idea, Evan, that it might be more of a rotation than we first thought, one, based on last year, and two, just based on Kelvin's status and Funchess emerging this offseason.
It's going to be a really interesting situation, and hopefully we get a better read in the third preseason game, where the Panthers should treat this one like a legit game. Funchess's first team exposure did rise in the second preseason game.
Right. And there was no Burson, correct? Yeah. So I think that whereas
good point,
he did not play ahead of Burson or necessarily behind him, Burson was receiving first team snaps in week one.
Do you think that Kelvin Benjamin is like the alpha 1A wide receiver like AJ Green, Julio Jones in this offense?
I think they view him as their X, and in their offense, mm-hmm. and Cam has said this in the past, the X is their guy. Now, I do think that Devin Funchess is second team X, right? But also mm-hmm. can be your second team Y or your second team Z or wherever you want to put him. He can really play anywhere. Use him in the slot, use him outside. And as much as it's kind of been a new storyline the past one or two weeks, it seems like they are worried about Kelvin's conditioning, that they don't think he can be on the field for 65 plays a game. But I think when he is in the ball game, he is their primary target. We just have to guess right now how many snaps he's going to play. And in this one, all signs point to him playing at least 30 and into the third quarter.
Gotcha.
So, okay. Bills, Redskins is the next one. Evan, LeSean McCoy looks awesome, nasty,
yeah.
Disgusting, amazing. Against the Giants, I mean, we know that the Giants never invest in linebackers at all early. They just take like everyone else's first team or first round running back or first round linebackers and then throw them money towards the end of their careers and then they retire. But LeSean McCoy was just dominating. If he is there on the board, he's going to generate a ton of interest from me. Because just of how great he looks, and we know that the opportunity is obviously there because behind him, it seems like Reggie Bush is kind of pushing Mike Gillisley in some ways.
Yes, and LeSean McCoy, I mean, I thought it returned for him last year where he started to look dynamic again and like one of the most elusive backs in football because he wasn't that in 2014 with Philadelphia. He was a rough watch in 2014, but it came back for him last year when he was healthy. He had a that 10-game stretch where he had at least 100 total yards and or a touchdown in 10 straight games. And it's definitely back for him. One factor working against him is that our strength of schedule analyst, Warren Sharp, has the Bills with the toughest run defense schedule in the league this year. That may not apply as much to the Bills, though, because they are such an impose-our-will kind of rushing offense where they have a running quarterback and they have one of the best RBs in the league. And I just did the Fantasy Feast with Ross Tucker, and he also has them with like a top 10 offensive line. So not as big of a concern, but I'm with you. And his price is good. Shady McCoy's price is good. I mean, he usually goes third round as like the 8th, 9th, 10th running back off the board. And I mean, you can make a case that if he stays healthy, he could lead the NFL in carries. You know, he can be up there in terms of rushing efficiency. He doesn't have Carlos Williams around to vulture TDs.
Right.
You know,
he looked great as a receiver against the Giants too.
He is a good receiver. He had a pretty good receiving. He wasn't fully healthy last year, so he didn't put up monster volume as a passing game back. But he had a pretty good year as a receiver last year. So I'm with you, man. I love Shady McCoy as a third round fantasy pick.
I spoke with JP Finley, who's the Redskins beat writer for CSN Mid-Atlantic this week. We did like a 30-minute Facebook live stream. And so I wanted to make sure to ask him about Rob Kelly versus Keith Marshall, because there was that 3-day span about Keith Marshall, yada, yada, yada. And he says that Rob Kelly is clearly the superior player in the coach's eyes right now. With that said, Matt Jones may be likely back for week one. It seems like the only running back that I'm considering, and I'm definitely considering him at his price right now, is Chris Thompson, because he has a defined role. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and if this team that the Redskins have a really tough schedule this year, and teams are going to be able to, I think, run the ball against the Redskins. I love their boundary corners.
Yeah.
And I like, you know, some of their pass rushers, but I think the teams will be able to run the ball against them. And, they have a tough schedule, and their best talent is in the passing game, clearly. So they could very easily be a team that's throwing the ball 35, 40 times a game. That would put Chris Thompson in a great spot. Actually, in Rich Rebar's bold predictions article, which came out on Monday, which is fantastic, he predicted that Chris Thompson would be this year's Theo Riddick and lead all NFL running backs in receptions.
I like that.
I like it too. I mean, Chris Thompson's got to stay healthy to do that, and he's never done that going back to FSU. But if he does stay healthy, he can be a weekly asset in PPR leagues. I think I'm out on Matt Jones at this point, Josh. I did not want to see dude get hurt in preseason. Already had enough questions about him as a player.
And the only reason we were in now is we see him get hurt.
Right.
Right.
So I'm backing off.
It is noteworthy to say that Josh Jackson has shed his walking boot and that he's running on the sideline, but that's all he's doing. So he's still going pretty way too early for me to draft him in anything, because we haven't even seen him, even though he's a great talent. And even when he is healthy, it's not like he's going to be immediately inserted into 3 wide receiver sets, because they want Jamison Crowder in the slot, it seems like, in every time that they run a 3 wide receiver set.
Can't really draft Josh Doxson at this point.
Steelers Saints. So, Sammy Coates preseason week 1, dreadful. Sammy Coates preseason week 2, bad. So now it is Eli Rogers in 3 wide receiver sets as a slot guy with Marcus Wheaton on the outside. Obviously that they liked Sammy Coates' offseason, right? Beat writers like Sammy Coates' offseason. So maybe at some point he reemerges as that third wide receiver. But again, this is someone at his price I am not touching, because I just cannot count on him. Even when he's given the opportunity, he hasn't shown he can take advantage of it this preseason at all.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, the drumbeat is that Sammy Coates is now a buy low. But, you know, when it's week 4 and he's a healthy scratch, and he's getting outproduced by – and he's getting outproduced by DHB.
Right.
That buy low is not going to look too bright.
I'm with you. So I mean, we talked about it with the Redskins, because it is the Steelers and Redskins in week 1. And I think someone brought up this point online. I can't remember who it was. But the boundary corners for the Redskins are very good, right? The outside guys. Could Eli Rogers be a sneaky play as the slot guy working the inside, working the interior? Because it is a slot camp battle right now for the Redskins defining. It might have been you who brought this up, Evan, by the way. So is Eli Rogers even in the conversation as someone? Because he's going to be super cheap that week one.
Yeah, he's stone minimum price on FanDuel.
Right.
I want to see – this is the preseason game that I'm going to make sure I'm watching.
Got it.
Because I want to see if Coates gets reps with Ben and the ones. I think he will, but how many will he get? You know, Darius Hayward Bay is locked onto the game day roster because he's the four and he plays special teams. And right now, Ed Bouchette of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, one of the best beat writers like of all time. I mean, he's like a Hall of Fame beat writer. And he still, has his finger squarely on the pulse of the Steelers. He thinks the three receiver set is Eli Rogers in the slot, Marcus Wheaton at flanker, Antonio Brown at X. So, I want to see like if there's chemistry with Ben and Eli. I want to see, because that matchup on paper is pretty nice for Eli Rogers week one. The Redskins have Bashaud Breeland and Josh Norman. Those guys are going to be on the outside. And they wanted Kendall Fuller to win the slot corner job, but he's not ready. Yeah. So they turned to a guy by the name of Deshaun Phillips. Right now, looks like they're slot
fake
corner.
Name. That's a fake name. let's go to the Saints. Reports this week that Kobe Fleener is slow to develop, Evan. It seems like we've heard that for the last 4 years. he's being drafted as what? Like, in some cases, the fourth tight end, the fifth tight end, the sixth tight end. Like, I understand opportunity is there, but if he's not firmly as the tight end one heading into the season, do you feel comfortable with him at that price?
I mean, I've got him, I think, tight end four.
Yeah.
I'm kind of not really – maybe I should be paying more attention to this kind of stuff. You know, maybe this will come back to bite me, but I can't imagine that he's not out there playing 70% of the snaps in week one. Yeah. I mean, that's really hard for me to imagine after they gave him a big contract. I mean, it's not like we're hearing that other guys are running ahead of him.
True.
It's just that not everything has been perfect so far, and they're still trying to build, which, I mean, shouldn't be that big of a surprise. But, I mean, I'm not moving him down right now.
I thought it was cool to see Daniel Lasco get some run early on. So it seems like because of special teams and kind of his workload so far in preseason week two, that Lasco might be locked onto that roster, which I like because he's a spark freak. Browns Bucks.
Yeah, and Marcus Murphy is like dropping punts. So that could be a way for Lasco to get on the team. I mean, apparently he's already one of their better special teams players, Lasco.
Nice. Browns Bucks. So much to talk about with the Browns. This is going to be our first exposure to Josh Gordon, Corey Coleman, and Terrell Pryor, correct? They're all practicing.
Dude, that is a dope three-receiver set.
Think about, like, just run three verts, guy. Well, four verts with Gary Barnage, too, and just, like, let them work.
Right.
Let them work.
RG3 is, like, he's set up to succeed.
It would be hilarious if they had a better offense this year than the Redskins. Just based on, like, where the Browns were last year with their wide receiver core and then bringing in RG3. And RG3 has made some tremendous throws. Now, I will say they were from clean pockets, so let's, halt the presses a bit there. But, I mean, that throw to Gary Barnage was unreal. It was outstanding. And there was another one to Terrell Pryor, too. Terrell Pryor is looking mighty fine as at the very least, a vertical receiver who can run by just about anyone who is also tall.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. He dusted Desmond Trufant. And then the Browns had joint practices with the Bucks this week, and he's dusting Brent Grimes. It looks like he's ready. And then they got Rashard Higgins. You know, I will be interested to see, do they feed Josh Gordon this week? Because there was this report that just kind of came out of nowhere.
I was going to ask you about this. Yeah, I was going to ask you about this.
That the Browns have, all of a sudden we hear, ooh, the Browns have been hearing inquiries about, trade inquiries about Josh Gordon, which is like, I mean, it just came out of nowhere. It was like unprovoked. Right. So did the Browns tell that to Schefter or whatever, and they want to unload him because they probably want to keep a lot of guys on the roster.
They just drafted four guys.
And of course they're going to keep Terrell Pryor because he's a starter. I mean, I think they might. I mean, the thing is that how much could they really get for Josh Gordon?
Right.
But if they could get like a third round pick, like a conditional third round pick, like I think they might consider that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you thought that this was being fed by the Browns, because it makes a ton of sense. Finally, with the Browns, Isaiah Crowell is out snapping Duke Johnson in this backfield. I think it's 22-16. I think Levitan charted that again. Look, I think we all agree that Duke Johnson is the more talented player. He's much more of a big play threat. He's the better fantasy play. But if his role is kind of just to that passing down and also being mixed in some running work, does this give you some pause based on where he's being drafted right now?
And Duke Johnson was a guy that I got a lot of shares in May in MFL 10s.
Right.
You know, and I don't, and where I was taking him, like fourth, fifth turn, you know, I wish that I wouldn't have done that. I mean, I think his value, the arrow in his value is going down. Mm-hmm. And really at this point, he's someone that I want to avoid.
Wow.
You combine the concern that you just mentioned to where he's not the feature back. Like it looked at one point like he could, with the fact that, the dual threat quarterbacks, the running backs on those teams have not had big, high volume reception seasons historically.
Right.
I mean, you look at Cam, you know, Jonathan Stewart had 16 catches last year. Yeah. Look at Alfred Morris. I mean, not that he probably just can't even catch, but I mean, no one was catching passes in those RG3 offenses in Washington.
Right.
Russell Wilson, look at his running backs. They never caught a ton of passes. In Tennessee, Chris Johnson didn't have huge reception ceilings with Vince Young or Jake Locker. Yeah. So, I think that is a concern. Like with Duke Johnson, if he only catches 45 passes this year, we know he's not going to score a lot of touchdowns. Yeah. You know, where is he going to get fantasy value?
Yeah.
That's a big concern because, you know, RG3, instead of dumping it down, you know, checking it down to Duke, he might just take off running. Yeah. And that would cut into Duke's reception total.
On the Bucks, there's very little to talk about, it seems like. There is ASJ versus Cameron Brate, though. Like, for a couple of weeks, everyone was just crapping on Safarian Jenkins, right? But I think he's looked decent from what I've seen. And it seems like he's getting some opportunity to maybe earn that spot back. So while I was targeting Cameron Brate later on in fantasy drafts, because it seemed like he was going to be the projected number one tight end, that now also seems uncertain. But is this just a situation you're just going to avoid completely?
Mostly. I mean, I'll look at ASJ late. It's just I don't really like to draft two tight ends unless I'm getting like Eifert in the eighth round. And then, I want to come back with Gates usually.
Yeah.
But ASJ has big upside. He always has had big upside, big touchdown scoring upside. I think that this team with Dirk Cutter now is the HC. They have a much, much, much more difficult schedule this year. They should be throwing the ball more often. So, that could lead to some more opportunity for ASJ. Pro Football Focus has given him awesome grades for his blocking.
Hmm.
So far in preseason, and we're talking about really limited sample sizes, but that could be an indication that the light is starting to flip on and ASJ is busting his ass out there blocking, because that's not necessarily something that was a big strength for him in his first, what, two NFL seasons.
Packers and 49ers is the final game on Friday. Evan, there's a lot of Jared Cook buzz right now. There's a lot of Jared Aberderis buzz right now, positive on both accounts. Pick one of those and run with it. Which one?
I'm not really into Jared Cook, and I mean I get the you know why people are into him. He gets to play with Aaron Rodgers. He's cheap. But I think ultimately that's just going to be a timeshare with Richard Rodgers, and we're not going to know who to start week to week. I don't think that Richard Rodgers is going to go away. Jared Cook, never a good blocker, never a good red zone target. And I mean, I think he's a situational player in Green Bay, and maybe he'll tease every now and again, but I don't think he's going to be getting consistent targets. Jared Aberderis, can he beat out Davante Adams, who the Packers want to succeed desperately? Jared Aberderis needs to straight up beat out Davante Adams
to get onto the
field consistently. Right.
I'm getting Davante Adams still like 15th, 16th round in these MFLs and feeling like, okay, I don't like Davante Adams as a player, but I'm feeling pretty good about that because he is the third wide receiver right now. I'm also getting James Starks in like the 14th, and I'm loving that because correct me if I'm wrong, but at times last year, he was the feature back in the red zone, right? He was getting all of those touches and Eddie Lacy was not. And obviously that converts into points, or it's more likely that he'll get touchdowns if he's the red zone back. I mean, it seems obvious, but to me, that's the way I go with my thought process.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he'll be locked in as the red zone back this year, but I do think that he's locked in as the primary passing game back. He has not given up a sack in pass protection since 2011. And last year, he set career highs in receptions and receiving yards. So I think he is locked in. I think he's going to have a stable week-to-week role, and then he hits really big if Eddie Lacy gets hurt.
49ers, Evan, it's all bad. Like, it's all bad. Like, Blaine Gabbert is horrendous. Just terrible. He was missing swing passes again and all this stuff. and you put the kiss of death on Mike Davis. Like, Mike Davis was bad this week, too. And we've talked all offseason about how much we like Bruce Ellington. But can you even draft someone on this team at all?
I think at this point, if you own Torrey Smith, or if you want to own Torrey Smith or Carlos Hyde, you really want Colin Kaepernick to be the starting quarterback. You really want that to happen. But that could be bad news for Bruce Ellington, though, and for Vance McDonald.
Yeah.
I mean, their personnel is garbage.
It's so bad. This team is so bad.
And I mean, unless you really believe that Chip Kelly has magic, then I don't know how you could put a lot of faith in this offense. Even Carlos Hyde, who people really want to love, horrible schedule, musical chairs on the offensive line, don't know who the quarterback's going to be. It could just be a three and out offense. Lots of plays, lots of three and outs.
It's just amazing that in 2016, Blaine Gabbert's a starting quarterback. Once again, thank you so much for listening and obviously for rating and reviewing the podcast. I know it takes 15, 30, 45 seconds. Just depends on how fast of a typer you are. But it really does help us. It helps us reach new viewers, new listeners. So if you enjoy it, please do us a favor and do that on iTunes, on Stitcher, wherever you listen. Once again, it helps us out. And subscribe, obviously, because we'll obviously have a podcast next week for week 4 of the preseason. We'll also have 3 podcasts a week during the regular NFL season. And if you don't see it, download the companion podcast of this one for all the Saturday preseason games. But until next week, I'll talk to you all soon.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.